Hello, hello, listeners. Welcome to Tales Over Tales podcast. It's Jordan.
And Alicia.
And Abigail.
The gang's all back. Oh my gosh. It's so good to see you both.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Oh. Okay. Oh my gosh. It feels like it's been a long time since we've like gotten together to record, and yet at the same time, it actually kind of doesn't either. I feel like this month went by so fast.
It did.
I feel like the month went, I feel like there was so much time in between like when we recorded last and now. I'm like, last week and I was like, are we recording? Like, it's been a very long time, but it hasn't.
Oh, well, we'll get into highs and lows of this month since last recording. Abigail, why don't you go ahead and go first? How are you doing, girl? Some highs and lows.
Let's see, how am I doing? Highs and lows from the past month. Highs have been that the weather is getting nicer, so finally able to stay outside with just like a light jacket and not freeze. So that's but nice.
Fifth year perfect day.
Yes. Not too hot, not cold.
All you need is a light jacket.
Exactly. So it came true, which I was very, very happy about. And so that's just been nice to get out and go on walks. My boyfriend, Matt, and I, we just went on a hike today with his 5-year-old nephew. And it was like a little bit of a strenuous hike because it was like pretty steep, but like not too steep. Thank goodness, because my poor knees, my old knees wouldn't be able to take a straight shot up. But it was really nice. And his nephew, he's so funny. He's, like I said, he's 5 years old. And he's funny because he talks a lot. And so for the whole like hour and a half, he was just like talking nonstop. But it was like super cute. So like he was talking about like Godzilla versus Kong and that he's gonna beat up snakes for us and bears. It was, but yeah, it was so adorable. So that was definitely a high from today.
Please tell me you recorded something.
No, we're just listening.
So when you have to like whip that voice memo app, you know?
That's true. I should have recorded it and shown it to him later on in years. Be like, this was you at 5 years old talking about whatever came to mind. But it was so cute. Like, his mom, like, does this thing. She's like, okay, if you have a good report by the time, like, Uncle Matt brings you home, then you can have, like, a Coke and some ice cream if you want. And so the whole ride back to his mom, he was just like, do I have a good report? I have a good report, right?
Aw, cute.
It was so, so cute. So that was nice. Yeah, so just getting outdoors have been my highs. And then lows, I'm trying to think about like lows. I feel like lows is like, I feel like I haven't had like a good vacation in a while and I'm starting to be in that space where I need it. I feel like it's a time of year where it's like, I'm looking forward to the summer and like, you know, just the vacation times because I just need a break.
Fish retreat with the three of us. I'm going to take this to our text chat and we're going to figure something out because I like this idea. But we need a bookish retreat, take a long weekend, find somewhere super nice with an Airbnb, get all like books, our wine, our like, I mean, come on. Would that not just be the best weekend? Is that not what you ask for, Alicia? I mean, come on.
I mean, I'm down. I'm down. So
yeah, I'd be down for just like a hotel down the street, honestly.
That's fair enough. Okay. Need of a vacation. That's your low.
Yeah, definitely. I feel it. I'm just like, ugh. And like my job, my new job, they give 7 days, like 7 holidays during the year off. And so it's been since Christmas. I haven't really like really done much. So I'm ready. I'm ready. Book is retreat 2024. Let's go.
I get to work on it, I promise. I get to work on it. What about for you, Alicia? How about some highs and lows?
So some highs, have a really exciting opportunity for work going on right now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just waiting for like the official on like when I get to start. So that's still kind of like up in the air about that. But either way, it's gonna be an exciting new adventure for us, or for me mostly. What else? Jermaine and I celebrated our 6-month wedding anniversary. We hit the halfway mark already. I know. I can't believe it's already.
It goes so fast, girl.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. So I'm like trying to think if I had any other highs going on for this month. But I guess I can just go into my lows. I was on vacation like a couple weeks ago, but I couldn't even enjoy it because I was sick the whole time. So I was just at my mom's and, you know, it was fine because I was able to get a little relaxation in, for the most part, but still I was like not feeling good. And then just, you know, of course, without getting into too much of the details, but, my husband, he had to go to the hospital last night. He's doing okay now. He's resting. And you know, he's still dealing with everything a little bit, but you know, he's doing okay. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay. Yeah, thanks. We're hanging in there. So he's good. I think he might be sleeping, so yeah, he's good.
She's like, I think I can hear him faintly snoring.
Right, I know. I was like, told him, I was like, I need you to just be in my eyesight for the rest of the day, please. Thank you. So, yeah. My little highs and lows.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Wow. So my highs and lows. My gosh. I do feel like the weather took a little bit of a turn here. I'm going to use that for a high because I've been able to go on like a lot of really nice long walks and listen to audiobooks, listen to podcasts. Taylor's new album, which is so good. I haven't even finished listening to all of it, but I am in love.
I may have listened to it like twice already, but I mean, that's just throwing it out there.
It is so, so good. Tortured Poets Department is phenomenal. I am enjoying it immensely. Yes, exactly. And so that would be my high for sure. I feel like I've definitely been getting to read a lot of really great things. I haven't actually really shared a lot on social media lately, but I have been going through the Throne of Glass series by Sarah J. Maas, and I have the last two books in the series to finish. So definitely kind of itching to get there, but I had a couple other books that were also on my TBR, my to be read pile. So working through those. Lots of really good reading lately. Great weather and great reading. I'm going to put those on my highs. My lows, great reading, so little time. Like, could we just talk about how the TBR pile, it will just be forever long. And am I internally at peace with this? Yes, I think that I am. At the same time, I wrestle because... It's a battle. If there's anyone out there of our listeners that also listens to the Currently Reading podcast, they have a ton of like really great book recommendations and book reviews and stuff. But one thing that they talk about is reader know thyself. Like, okay, so are you a seasonal reader? Are you a mood reader? Are you, you know, how do you feel about not finishing if you're just not into it? You know what I mean? Like or even a rereading, for example, listener, before we were recording, the three of us were kind of talking a little bit about that. There's not a whole lot of books that I like to reread, to be honest. I read a book and then I'm done with it. But anyway, I digress. So much reading, so little time. Womp womp. There's my love.
The dilemma.
It is such a dilemma. Lord have, and then you throw a Kindle into the mix with Kindle Unlimited, and it just makes it worse. Or does it make it better? I think it makes it better. It's all about perspective, ladies.
Oh,
Exactly.
That's my problem, though, because I got the Kindle thinking that I was going to use the heck out of it. And then I barely touched it because I think I'm starting to realize that I would much rather have like the physical copy in my hands while I'm reading it. But I'm like, okay, I bought this thing though, so I need to read it. I actually need to start diving into it more. So
don't get me wrong. I still, as you can see, I still have like, and this is not even half of my library, as all of you know. So I am all for the physical copies of books, of course, but like my Kindle, it's just so nice to travel. It's lightweight. It's a lot easier. So I don't know. Maybe you'll find the turning point for you, Alicia. And even if you don't, then you don't. But like, even for example, I'm going out of town this upcoming weekend. It's my grandma's 96th birthday.
Yay, so happy birthday, Granny.
I know. So I get to go see her for her 96th birthday. And like, I'm not going to take any of my physical books with me. I'm just going to take my Kindle and read on my Kindle. So
when she turned 90, and I'm like, what, 96? It flew by.
I know. Isn't it crazy? Between my husband and I, she is the only living grandparent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So some emotions even too. They're like, it's kind of hard and it's weird because you always feel like this time is the last time you're going to see them. Alicia and I were even talking about that at our book club last night, as she and I kind of were catching up before the other ladies came and, you know, you're always like,
well, yeah, that was my other high I meant to mention was the book club last night. 'Cause that was so much fun, but
it was so much fun. So, yeah. So anyway, let's get into what we're reading and what we're drinking, because I'm actually really excited to talk about this book. Yeah. I don't know, girls, are you excited to talk about this book? Oh, yes. Abigail looks like,
that one emoji.
But we, listener, are covering Tom Lake by Ann Patchett this month. And of course, we could have nothing but a cherry-themed drink. So, listeners, I will also try to link in the show notes the link to the drink. If you are followers on Instagram, on Bookstagram of Beach Reads and Bubbly, her name is Katie. She is wonderful. She puts out a ton of book recommendations and she pairs books with drinks just like we do. So because the majority of this book takes place on a cherry picking farm. We had to have a cherry drink, and we are doing a cherry gin fizz today, which it's actually pretty refreshing for today. What is it? My wife says it's about 87 degrees today. So this is very nice. Little, it is. You know, so cheers, ladies.
Cheers.
So excited. Okay. Should I get into this summary?
Mm-hmm.
What do we, okay.
Let's do it.
Tom Lake by Ann Patchett. Told between then and now timelines, Tom Lake by Ann Patchett shares the coming-of-age story of our protagonist, Laura Nelson. We experience the summer of 2020 and the COVID-19 pandemic all over again, as Laura enjoys having her three daughters home on the family cherry tree farm in Traverse City, Michigan. Forced to relive a very significant summer of her past as well, Laura recounts for her daughters, Emily, Nell, and Maisie, the time she once dated famous actor Peter Duke, before he was famous. It all starts when Peter and Laura are cast together in the Summerstock Theater rendition of the popular show Our Town. With the idealistic backdrop of Tom Lake, Michigan, these two are drawn to each other from the very beginning. What transpires along the way is a journey of a young girl becoming a woman, of dreams growing and evolving with gratifying life experiences. Laura learns some very hard lessons along the way too, from rejection and failure to boundaries and the painful reality that is heartbreak and addiction. So I guess we should also put a little bit of a trigger warning there at the top for those of you listeners. If you have any background experience, any trauma experience with more specifically alcohol abuse, I would say, totally fine and totally respect the decision potentially to skip, because I know that that's a pretty heavy theme in this book. So please do take care. But
spoilers too.
You go. So tell me, what did you ladies think of this book?
I loved it. I just thought it was such a beautiful story. You know, she's out on this cherry tree farm living her best life with her daughters under, you know, COVID circumstances. I am so sorry. Gotta turn my phone off. But, you know, just under like certain like circumstances, and, you know, she's just with her daughters, telling this story of a love that she had. And it's not anything crazy. Like, there's no crazy twist at the end of the book. There's no, you know, nothing too shocking ends up happening. You know, it's, you know, there are some things that we, I think, expect, but it's not anything like, oh my gosh, like that was so heartbreaking or, you know, terrible or anything like that. So I just thought it was a nice little read to do.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Abby.
I like the story. I did like the story. In the beginning, it was a little bit slower paced, but I think it was a reflection of like the slower pace of life that they were, you know, kind of like engaged in with being on the cherry farm and everything. So as the book got, like as I got further in the book, I recognized that. And it also gave me time to understand all the characters, especially Laura and how they develop her character, with her character development. Is I think it's very interesting. Kind of like you said, it, like you're reading in the summary, is that she really like learns a lot, like from like failure and rejection to like being like, you know, from like girlhood to womanhood. And I think this summer, that summer that she talks about and recounts with her family, she, you know, she does a really good job of identifying how that changed her. Because at first I was like, well, what's the point of like her talking about the past? But then I recognized that she got deeper and deeper. And even the parts that she didn't share with her daughters that we got to learn about, I'm like, wow, this was a really life-changing event that happened for her that was really needed. So I really like the story. Slower paced. There's one character in particular I do not like. Down with Duke.
We're going to get there. Well, I want to talk about your issue with the pacing for a second. I mean, COVID was not that long ago, right? And to that point, I mean, I don't know if either of you feel this way, but I can kind of look back and reflect on a little bit, at least, of the world as it was at that time, and even just my experience. It did feel like time was moving at a slower rhythm, at a slower pace, right? And there was so much going on in the world at the time, too. I, at times, remember dealing with so much anxiety because it was like I was having an out-of-body experience in some ways. That's how slow it felt like time was moving. And they even reference in a couple of parts, right? Like, oh, yeah, no, like, we're not putting on the news tonight. Or, you know what? I can only handle this much of the news at this time because of all of the things that are going on. So I like that you brought that up. I don't know if either of your experiences going through the global shutdown, going through the pandemic was like that, but I certainly know it felt that way for me.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. It was definitely such an interesting time for all of us. And I mean, like you said, just everything was shut down. There was hardly like anybody on the streets. It was like a ghost town anywhere that you had went. And, you know, just being stuck in your house all day because you couldn't go anywhere, like, that makes time go by incredibly slow. So yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah. I actually had like the opposite experience, because that was the time where everyone needed mental health services. And so my time, I actually got really burnt out after like the lockdown ended. I got so burnt out that I had to take a break, like a month break from working before I started a new position, because it was just like the need was so intense. And so my schedule became really like filled and intense. And, you know, anything from like, you know, people fearing like for their own health, fearing for the health and well-being of a loved one, experiencing loss. Mine was very opposite. And so, but no, I can understand that, you know, it was like a slower pace. My experience was like, I was very overwhelmed and had to take a break from mental health therapy for a little bit.
And everyone's experiences are different, but that's a good point. Have either of you read any other books that took place during COVID or that brought COVID into the picture? This was the first book I've read about, not about COVID, but just that had the pandemic written in the storyline.
No, it was a first for me too. I haven't read a book, yeah.
I think at the end of None of This Is True, they briefly talked about COVID, but nothing like too in depth.
In the epilogue or something like that, she's masking, right? Yeah. You're probably right, but it wasn't a part of this storyline. There's a couple other books out there that I know, and I can't think of the names right now, but that's not important. But there are books out there now that do basically write, you know, authors write the pandemic into the story, which very interesting. So do we just dive right into Laura and Peter Duke, or do we talk about how, okay, first, I'm looking at Abigail's face. She's like, no, thank you. But let's talk about the descriptions for a second. I love Ann Patchett's descriptive writing. I want to be on that cherry tree farm. I thought everything was quaint and charming. Summertime is probably the only time I think you'd catch me in Michigan. Just being completely honest. But what did you two think? Did you find that as well? Did you like it too?
Yeah, this book definitely created this little universe in my head that I would absolutely love to go visit. So between, you know, Valaris and now this, like, I'm so I'm down.
Really? Yeah. There you go. There you go. I love it.
I know, so I did too. It was so descriptive. It was so beautiful. Like you said, the way that she just describes everything, you can really picture in your mind exactly what's going on and what these characters are doing. And, you know, it was just so beautiful. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Their little patch of heaven. That's what I like kept thinking about. Like, while everything was going on around them with like the rest of the world, they have like this little patch of heaven where they could get up and go cherry picking, you know, pick the cherries together and have these conversations and spend, you know, most of their time together. I really like the description. I was like, man, I want to go there. Like, I would love to spend like a day just hanging out.
I know. Oh, so, so good. And then the relationship that she has with her daughters, we can kind of talk about that for a moment, because obviously that's a huge part of the book, right? So Laura has three daughters, Emily, Nell, and Maisie. I think I just named them in the order they were born. Mm-hmm. Did I? I think so.
I think so too.
But
Maisie's middle, isn't it?
Oh, and Nell is the youngest. Thank you. So it's Emily, Maisie, and then Nell. Yes, I believe you're right. And just seeing how different her relationships with each one of them are, right? Emily being the oldest, she's actually kind of this rebel rouser. She's the troublemaker, if you will. Laura describes her and talks even a little bit about when she was growing up, how she would test the waters quite a bit, right? Testing Laura and Joe's patience. Her husband's name is Joe. And and then you have Maisie, who is in the middle, right? And she's the one that wants to become the veterinarian.
Yep.
And so you have all of these families in the area that have their farms and have their animals and everything like that. And she definitely struck me as like that, you know, wholesome middle child type. And she, you know, doesn't try to like cause too much trouble. She just sort of stays in her lane, almost, if you will. And then there's Nell, and Nell being the youngest, it kind of seemed like Laura and Nell shared this really special connection, mostly because, not just because Nell was Laura's youngest, but also because Laura saw so much of herself in her. So, listener, to give you a little bit of background there, like, Nell essentially is wanting to be an actress, mm-hmm. just like her mother did at one point or another. Or did she? Question mark, right? Mm-hmm. I don't really know whether or not Laura ever like truly saw herself, you know, reaching that same level of success that Peter Duke did. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so it's really cute and it's really beautiful and sweet. I think it's so well written, the mother-daughter relationships, mm-hmm. between all of them. Even when there was this frustration or like tension and impatience, you felt the love.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely felt that for sure. And like, she knew each of her daughters so well. Like she really knew, talk about any of her daughter's personalities, you can see that like, wow, like, you know, she didn't lump them all together. She didn't like, you know, try to strip away their individuality. She just saw them each for who they were.
Yeah.
And loved them each of them very differently.
Yeah.
I think that Emily was a very interesting first child, because of how rebellious she, you know, she was and how angry she was for a very long time, to the point that you even see like Laura is still very hesitant with her. Like her rebellion phase like had ended like 10 years prior, you know, to like where the storyline was at. But you can tell tell that like she would say things where she would be hesitant to tell, to share too much with her oldest daughter, just because of her, you know, just past history. So yeah, you can really see hints of that throughout like their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I also loved how all of the girls had their names had a significance to it.
Yeah. So,
like, Emily was, of course, from Laura's time in our town. Macy was Joe's aunt. That was her name. And then Nell was Laura's seamstress and grandmother.
Yes.
So I just thought that was so like brilliant that was how they ended up creating all of that. And I also love too how this was a love story turn heartbreak turn love story, because of course Laura is with Joe now, but there's also another love story that's going on, and that's Emily with her longtime boyfriend. Oh my gosh, what was his name again?
Benny,
I think it was. Mm-hmm. And just how like they were kids, you know, they grew up together, and you know, it was just I loved how that ended up flowing into the story too, that you know, they end up getting married so anyway, that was just kind of my thing. I loved it.
Yeah.
That was so sweet.
They're the cutest because they get each other so well. And I like how Emily was like to be secretive, but like when, you know, the truth came out about like her planning a wedding and planning to elope and things like that, she felt like safe enough to be very forward with her family. Like, I have no idea what it means to be married or get married. And I felt that so much. I don't know if either of you two also felt that before getting married, but when I think about it, I'm like, is there a wrong way to do this? step into that phase of life. And so, you know, I really appreciated her honesty in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that there are wrong ways to step into it. And I also think at the same time, you have to know yourself well enough to know, you have to know your partner well enough to know that you can step into it confidently. I think that there's also something to be said, just to talk about Emily and Benny for a second, like, they grew up together, they knew each other, they had so much support in their families as well, that not only did it feel like that natural next step for them, but I also think, you know, yeah, you do, at least for me, I don't know how it was for Alicia, but like, at least for me, it was one of those things where it was like, no, I'm pretty sure I know what I need to know. I'm pretty sure I don't know everything, and I have to be humble, and I have to be honest about the reality that I don't know everything. However, I know enough to enter into this space and give it a try, because God is on my side, my family's on my side, my friends are on my side. Like, okay, then I can do this, right? So I don't know. I mean, that's just how, you know, that's how I see it, I guess. But you just kind of, that's what those leaps of faith sometimes I think are like. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, did you want to add anything to that, Alicia?
No, I mean, you pretty much nailed it right on the head. You know, it's definitely a leap of faith, but I think going into a marriage just in general is it can be challenging, but not in the way that people think it can be challenging. And it has nothing to do with the person, really. It's just the before part when you're planning it. Because planning it is a whole thing. And you have to make sure that, you know, everything is how you would like to see your day. And it's so funny too, because even though you can plan this and things can go right, it's like at the end of the day, though, you know, all that stuff and all the stress that you've put on yourself planning this big day. And like, honestly, none of it really matters, though, because you're going into this and you're marrying the person that you know you want to spend the rest of your life with. So, you know, once the day is over and you're like, all right, well, that was cool. Like, you know, so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. Well, and so to just kind of tie that in, and then we'll get to Peter Duke, because we hated it. Got to rip off the Band-Aid and talk about it sometime. But so Laura actually ends up meeting her husband, Joe. His last name is Nelson. He was called Nelson at the Summer Stock Theater. He was their director. And so, you know, little did Laura know at the time, right, when he invites a group of them to his family farm, to the cherry tree farm, and they get to experience all of this together, that like that would be where she would build this incredible, phenomenal life. And we'll talk about her and Joe in a moment, but yeah, What did we think of Peter Duke?
I think I wrote in my notes garbage disposal like at least 3 or 4 times. So there's my answer.
Ay, ay, ay. I know. It was hard.
It was just so hard to root for them. And I think it was just because we're going into this. We already know that like she found her love with Joe. She's at this cherry farm during COVID with her daughters. And it was just hard to connect like that love story with Peter Duke. And even then, Duke was, I have so many choice words. So I'm just going to continue to use garbage disposal because I feel like that is the best way. Like, you know, those like garbage disposals that are really stinky and like no matter how much lemon that you put down the drain, it's just the stink doesn't go away. That's him. That's
Alicia, that's how I feel about
that's how I feel. Okay, I'm sorry. Like the, I can't put it any other way, but that is who he is. And just
I thought he was trash as well from the moment I met him. Like when he came into the cabin, like flirting with Laura and like telling her like all this story, I'm like, oh, he's trouble. And I say that from like experience from men that I dated in the past and who have that sense of charisma. I just put it like in my notes. I was like, when like, you know, I understood why she was drawn to him, because I remember when I was like in my like early 20s, I was drawn to just really like chaotic situations because I thought like, you know, I'm like, oh, that's fun, that's spicy, that's what like relationships should be like. They should always be like, you know, keeping you on your toes. And then, you know, as I gotten older, like there's no one I have less in common with than like 21-year-old Abby.
That's a good point though. That is such a good point. And I think that's part of where she goes with telling her daughters this story, right? Because you kind of see like there's a part of her where she's like, oh my god, like why do they want me to tell them these things? Like why do we have to hash out these stories and like relive all of this stuff? But at the same time, yeah, I think part of it is because that's not who Laura is anymore, right? Mm-hmm. And then two, as her daughters, and I don't know if either of you want to speak to this nature of it in your dynamic or in your relationship with your mother, right? But until you reach a certain age, it is really hard to separate, oh, my mother is not just my mother. My mother lived this entire life. My mother is whoever she is, right? She's a sister, she's a daughter, she's a friend, she's a full-time professional woman, career woman, whatever it is, right? And it's hard, you know, I don't know. It's hard to, I don't know if either of you know where I'm going with that or get what I mean, but like, I think that's, I liked what you said. Like, there's no one that I have less in common with than my 20-year-old self, my 25-year-old self. Mm-hmm. And that's the lesson Laura's trying to teach her daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yep. I totally agree with what you're sharing. Like, you know, kind mm-hmm. of like sharing her story, because there's a lot of things that like even throughout the book, like the girls like didn't get clarification on until she shared that story. Like yeah. saying, oh, like I realized, you know, Laura was saying, like, I realized like maybe like I kept leaving this part of my life out of the story, and that's why they're confused right now. And so going through the story, like her life story the way she did, she filled in a lot of blanks and clarified a lot for her daughters. And, you know, yeah, I agree with you. Sometimes it's hard, like when we're younger, to humanize our parents. Mm-hmm. Like, just think like, oh, well, you've always been parents and like you haven't existed before then. Like teachers, when we see them outside of like school, we're like, what are you doing? You only live in school.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I appreciate Laura telling her story and, you know, and her girls genuinely being interested in her life. So,
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And to like bring back the conversation about like our 20-year-old selves, we actually kind of talked about this last night while we were at our book club too. And just how, you know, who we were in our 20s obviously is very different than who we are now and how we've shaped our lives based on our experiences. Because I know from my early 20 years, I didn't like who I was when I was 20, you know, in that era. You know, I was a mom at that young age too. So, you know, I had to divert my life very differently, but it still wasn't someone that I had liked or appreciated. And, you know, coming into who I am now is so different. And, you know, so anyway, yeah.
Journey
is important.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. The journey is absolutely important. Mm-hmm. So talking about Laura and Peter Duke for a second too, we'll just kind of lightly go over this for you, listener, those of you that have or haven't read the book. Part of the reason that all of this ends up coming up and that her daughters even are asking her to tell this story, we find out that earlier that year, earlier 2020, only just like a few weeks prior, that he passed away, that he died. And so that ends up being really sad. And as Laura's kind of reliving through some of these memories, let's bring up the friendship with Pallas for a second too, because I thought that that was really interesting. So Pallas was also in the Summerstock Theater. She was cast as Laura's understudy and was African American, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. And that's a whole thing there too, just with their dynamic and their friendship. I liked her from the beginning. I thought that she was kind, she was sweet. She really took Laura under her wing when Laura felt like a fish out of water, if you will, and she appeared at this Summerstock Theater. Oh my gosh, like so much of it went sideways when Laura, oh my God, what did she do? She tore her Achilles?
Yeah, she tore her Achilles while she was playing tennis.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, everything definitely went sideways. And okay, so this is going to sound very strange, but I appreciated that Laura told us what happened between her and her best friend when she was in high school.
Yes, Veronica.
Mm-hmm. Veronica, right? Yeah. Because, and then having experienced like that same thing, but she was on the other side of it, like listeners, just so that you're caught up and understand. So Veronica was seeing someone and Laura became intimate with the person that Veronica was seeing, and you know, their friendship ended.
Virginity to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she lost her virginity to her. I think both of them did lost their virginities to him. But Veronica was dating him first. First of all, he was a pedophile, 22-year-old man. What are you doing with 16-year-old girls? Have an issue, right? Not justifying his behavior. Jail, straight to jail. and then Laura with Pallas, she was on the other side where Duke slept with Pallas, or Pallas slept, you know, they both slept together, and Laura was the one who was cheated on. And so I say that sounds weird, but I think like she also needed to go through that, because I don't know if she understood the gravity of what, like how her and Veronica's friendship ended until that happened.
Well, it was her daughters that pointed it out to her, wasn't it? I feel like it was one of her daughters. So as she's telling them, because she started by telling them how she got into theater in the first place, mm-hmm. when she was in high school, right, with her friend Veronica. And then this guy, I can't remember, I feel like his name was Jimmy something or other that you're talking about. I can't remember. It doesn't matter. Not important. Jail. But but she shares with Emily, Maisie, and Nell what happened with him and what happened with Veronica and how that really damaged their relationship. Mm-hmm. And she explains being on the other side of it between Duke and Pallas and how that happens to her. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I kid you not. Like, I'm pretty sure it's one of the daughters that says to her, like, well, that, like, that was the same thing that mm-hmm. you did to Veronica. That was yeah. the same thing that happened. So I don't know. What did we think of Duke's brother, Sebastian? Saint Sebastian.
I love him so much.
Yeah.
Like, just the way that he took care of her, the way that his brother was not mentally capable of, because again, he is a garbage disposal. He definitely stepped in, I feel like, at the very, like, at the right time, for sure, because mm-hmm. Laura definitely needed somebody to be on her side, and I'm just so glad that he had made that appearance, and he's, you know, and I also loved, too, how, like, at the end of the book, he ends up showing up, too, and you know, that whole thing, which we can get into here in a bit too. But yeah, I loved him. He was such a great addition.
I think so too. I think that he added like a gentleness to the story. Cause I think the story was literally about, like, you know, loss. People were lost in like their early 20s, and he came in and he was very well established. He brought with him a sense of security and stability, and everyone sensed that. Everyone like had like a sense of calm and like trust with him, which was very nice. Even, you know, he was like the only one who could have tamed his brother Peter. So yeah, I really liked his character and the way he took care of Laura without even a question. Like, that was just a testament to who he was. And just how caring, of a person he is. And yeah, I really think that he was a good addition to the story and the role he plays. Like, even though they're subtle roles, they're still important. Because even, like, listeners, Pallas and Sebastian were dating. And so Pallas cheated on Sebastian
with
his brother. And he understandably got mad, but then we find out later on that he forgave his brother, which mm-hmm. takes a lot of maturity to do that.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, I liked how you just said he added this gentleness to it. It's interesting. I found his character to be super gentle. And I liked that you said that. That also had me thinking about Uncle Wallace a little bit, too. What did we think of him?
Uncle Wallace. You can go first.
For context, listener, Uncle Wallace was, like, the big famous actor. His name was actually Albert, I think. I can't remember.
But yeah.
Played, he was like this, you know, supposed to be this like famous 80s, 90s sitcom guy or whatever that played Uncle Wallace. And so everybody called him Uncle Wallace. And he stuck around and he did summer stock theater over the summer in Michigan. I mean, it helped sell tickets, right? It helped bring people to the theater, if you will. So, and then, oh my gosh, when that whole thing happened, and he's sick and then goes to the hospital, and oh, I was like, man, I mean, He also seemed like a little bit of a garbage disposal, if we're going to go with that description as well, to be completely honest. You know.
Yeah.
But was he very, like, warm and welcoming to Laura? And did he provide, you know, some gentleness to the story? I think he was someone, especially, like, the firsthand experience that Laura has. So the way that essentially it happens one night, the final curtain goes down, and Uncle Wallace just collapses.
Mm-hmm.
He collapses into Laura's arms, and it's this very traumatic experience for her, right? And I think that that was one of the few instances, one of the few experiences that our protagonist, Laura, goes through that kept her down to earth. And that's where I think I'll just call out that gentleness that you're talking about or that you're speaking to, because that was one of, like, even just the few occurrences, right, where Laura kind of starts asking herself, is this going to be my life? Like, I don't know that this is what I want. So anyway, I digress. What do you... You look like you have some thoughts, Alicia. Go for it.
No, I was just thinking too, because, you know, as we know with Uncle Wallace, he had a drinking problem.
Yes.
And it became even more apparent when they went to go clean out his room, and they found all kinds of liquor and in the fridge or under the bed. You know, it was just, it was apparent that this is and was an issue. And then you also get this other perspective too of where drinking becomes an issue when they're also doing the other show. I can't think of what it's called, where they have like a scene where they're drinking the tequila, right? And they're like, no, it's supposed to just be water in the bottle. But garbage disposal is like, no, like what fun is that going to be? Like, let's just drink the tequila. And I think that's also where that started many issues with him also with doing that, and how Laura tried very hard to fit into that, you know. And it was kind of going back to with her smoking cigarettes, you know, she,
yes.
Yeah. So she like wasn't into smoking cigarettes, but anyway, so
the first things Duke does is offer her a cigarette.
Yep.
I think
that's how that whole thing started too, with her smoking cigarettes, and then, you know, with her drinking. And yeah, it was just like a whole rabbit hole of issues between them with that too. So
yeah Uncle Wallace was, like, to me a sad character, like a sad, like in the book, not only, you know, Albert himself as a character that was written, he had been through what, 3 marriages. His current wife didn't show up, but his ex-wife showed up, like, at the hospital for him. In his closet, they were just a few suits. And then it was just alcohol.
Yep.
You know, everywhere. And that, yeah, that made me very sad, because, you know, it showed that, like, alcohol was part, like, a huge part of his life. And it really overcame him. Alcoholism is very, very difficult. Because, like, you know, addiction in general is very difficult, because it becomes like how you sustain yourself. And so seeing, I think there was like something written in the description that there wasn't a lot in the fridge, for, you know, like food wise, it was just like, just filled with alcohol. And so, yeah, so we just really see like that level of addiction that he was experiencing. And I was just like, man, I feel so sad for this person. But I think that Laura really, like, genuinely saw his humanity. I think you're right, Jordan. Like, that was a really traumatizing experience, having someone collapse and, like, you know, vomit blood on you, and, you know, see them in the hospital. You know, but, like, one thing about him is that he was really dedicated to what he did, because even at the end, she saw something was wrong, but he kept acting as so she was like, okay, I'm gonna act too. And it wasn't until the curtains went down that he let his guard down and showed that like something was going on for him. But yeah, I think he did bring a gentleness, but it was just also very sad to see like where, you know, where alcoholism brought him.
Well, and doesn't some of the sadness come in when part of it is Laura realizing she doesn't really have anybody to talk to about this problem? Like, she's been through this traumatic experience. She's lived through it with him so closely tied, right? Like, only maybe a degree removed. Like, you are that person he vomited blood on. You are that person that he fainted into. And there was nobody, I don't recall anybody asking her how she was.
Yeah, I don't either.
She was okay.
Yeah.
Even after she got injured, like, no one really, like, asked her how she was okay. Like, if she was okay. Like, no one really checked in on her. Duke barely checked in on her. Sebastian was the only one who was willing to, like, wheel her around and do all these things for her. Mm-hmm. And, like, stress for the show, like, was the only person really engaging with her and things like that. But I think, like, after she got tore her Achilles, I think that was, like, a reality check for her about what show business really is. Like, the show really does go on.
Mm-hmm.
With or without you.
Mm-hmm.
Literally. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then I guess we can go to, so fast forward a little bit. There is a point in time, and I don't know about you two, but I was surprised by how early it came on in the book. So I wanted to ask if either of you had agreed with Emily in thinking potentially that Peter Duke was her father.
I did for a hot second. For a hot second, I thought so. But then when, as Laura was talking and like sharing her story and like timeline things, I'm like, oh no, it wouldn't make sense. But that goes with like Emily not knowing much about her mom's life, because they thought that immediately after she left Duke, she fell in love with their dad, Joe. And so of course, like maybe because of that confusion, and then that wasn't ever really clarified, that makes sense that Emily thought that Peter Duke was her father. But I don't know what it was about, like, why she was so attached to this idea all throughout the teens, to the point, like, where it would just, like, cause so much strife and, like, and she had so much anger towards her parents, you know, for it. But, like, I don't know, like, if she was just having, like, an identity crisis, if we can, you know, kind of, like, categorize that. You know, that experience of that, but it was very interesting how intensely she believed, and how even years later, when you know, there's Laura's telling her story, she treads lightly because she knows she can see like that she still has like this, Emily still has like this alliance to Peter Duke for some reason. So, yes, it was just very interesting.
It was like nearly a hill she was willing to die on,
yeah. Well, no, because I was thinking about it too, and I thought that originally the reason why Emily was like die hard on Duke being her dad, because didn't Joe mention like, because you know how the girls always watched his movies, and didn't Joe like mention that to the girls when they were younger, like, oh yeah, your mom, like that used to be your mom's boyfriend, but she wasn't ready to tell the girls that story yet because they were still so young. And then you fast forward to when he dies, and then she's like, okay, well, I guess it's time to like tell them the story of, you know, when I, that summer I fell in love with him. But the thing with Emily and Duke being her dad, like at first I thought that was what was going to be like a secret throughout this whole book. And then, like you said, with the timelines, like I was like, okay, maybe it's not. But then when Laura goes and visits him at the rehab, 6 weeks later, she ends up getting pregnant. And I was like, oh my gosh, like there is that twist that I was expecting. But then she ends up, you know, getting an abortion. And I was like, oh, okay, so now we definitely know, scratch that off the table. She's really Joe's daughter. So that made me feel good. But I feel also, though, I don't know, maybe it was just me that felt that suspense going through the book. Like, is Emily actually Duke's, you know? Anyway, I didn't think it was necessary, but I don't know. That's just me.
You didn't think that twist as like a plot device was necessary? Is
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
I agree and disagree, I suppose, because I hear what you're saying. And then also at the same time, to that point, like the thing of it is, Laura was consistent in the stories that she told her daughters. She never told Emily that Peter Duke was her dad. Like, that was never, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because she knew what was true. She didn't necessarily want to like keep the truth from her daughters. I think at the same time, she was doing her best as a mother to control the narrative, to say, here's what you need to know, right? She doesn't share that she had the abortion.
No, she doesn't.
Yeah, she like leaves that for herself.
Right.
Like, I don't think she even told her husband.
Joe doesn't know either. So,
Which is, first of all, I want to share a little bit about that experience with her. Like, please. Her going to the rehab, like Peter Duke, it had been like a few years since she'd like talked to him, and all of a sudden he randomly reached out to her and like said that he was in rehab and asked her.
It was very,
It was very strange. And then he asked her, come visit me, it's part of my healing. And then, like, you know, basically she finds out later that he only invited her over to have sex with her. And that was like his main goal, and that's how she ends up, you know, ends up pregnant. And that solidifies to me, like, that he was the worst. I don't think he was ever interested in his own healing or getting to the root of, like, what was going on for him. I think that, you know, circumstances led to him to go to rehab. And, you know, he just was trying to, like, still have a good time. Like, he never grows up. He never changes, basically, is what I'm saying. And if she had pursued him, you know, to like try to build something with him, let's say this, like, I think that she would have been stuck in her 20-year-old self like he was, as opposed to growing and changing and maturing and having this lovely family that she ends up having with Joe. So I think that just, like, at first I was like, why is it here? That's so weird. But then I realized, you know, I think it's just for her to like solidify that she made the right choice in walking away.
Yeah, because it's such an odd, part of the story. Like, it's just such a weird, I don't know, it's a weird part of the book. And yet at the same time, you would argue it's one that obviously, I mean, plays an integral part of it too. I started to wonder if he didn't only just struggle with alcohol addiction, but if he also did have sex addiction, actually, to be completely honest, because their relationship, even from the jump, is like super lustful.
Oh, yeah.
So, and it seemed like that with Palace, too. Like, he would flirt with Palace, or like he would even flirt, I feel like maybe he would even flirt with like any of the other girls in front of Laura.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying, like, don't come at me. I'm not trying to say, like, just because somebody enjoys a healthy dose of flirting, does that mean that, like, you are a sex addict? I'm just saying, like, also at the same time, though, too, like, the, and they weren't, like, super, like, even smutty or spicy or anything like that, but, like, the descriptions of the persistent lovemaking, mm-hmm. like, or the need for intimacy. I feel like there's even one part where she talks about, like, yeah, like, we had our rhythm, we had our routine, this is what we would do. And a lot of it circled around rehearsals, cigarettes, alcohol, sex.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would agree. I think he does have, like, a sex addiction. I just think he just says addiction was unfortunately a part of his life. Sex, maybe even drugs, alcohol, right? Because mm-hmm. even as you get, I think about, like, actors or musicians in the past, like, who the more famous they got, the harder, like, their addiction became. Mm-hmm. And like, being, you know, they would try harder drugs and eventually would lead, you know, a lot of them led to their death, right? I think, like, what is it called, the 27 club or something like that, where it's just like a bunch of
the under 27.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like, where a bunch of, like, musicians, actors, actresses, like, you know, they don't make it past 27 and things like that. Mm-hmm. They live this, like, they have this theme of, like, living hard, you know, like, and whatever that comes with. And I think Peter Duke was caught in that a lot of the time. And I think mm-hmm. that's unfortunate. And I even think that also led to part of his passing. I believe that maybe he was under the influence when he was passing, because when you look back at the story, he was always swimming. And so, like, my assumption is that he was a very strong swimmer. You know, and that he was, you know, he was just used to, like, being in the water, and he's very athletic. And so for him to pass away by drowning, my thought is, like, he must have been under some really strong influence for that to happen.
Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. a good. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Well, and that's a good, I don't know if you want to add anything else, Alicia, but I think that's a pretty good spot to, like, take it in for a landing, because ultimately what ends up happening towards the end. So Laura finishes telling her daughters this story. Emily comes around, realizes that, you know, she definitely is not Peter Duke's daughter. And Sebastian comes back into the mix. Peter's brother comes back into the mix, because we find out that it was actually, like, one of Peter's wishes. He wanted to be buried. He wanted to be left there on the cherry farm, on the cherry tree farm. And so they find a little plot for him. And it was an interesting moment for me at the ending. I don't know how y'all felt about the ending. I mean, I liked it. I was like, oh, like, okay, I think this is great. This is sweet. Like, because the whole point is that Peter had gotten to really see and experience Joe's family, what they were like, and he had wanted that, right? And so fast forward then, when Joe and Laura have inherited the farm and they have their family and all of these things, and Sebastian brings his remains back in order for him to be able to be buried there, when felt like he witnessed and experienced happiness.
Because he had bought up that plot of land. And that's
why I was just about to say that.
Mm-hmm. That's the detail I was missing. Go ahead.
Yeah, he bought that plot of land, and that's why the previous owners, Maisie and I forgot her husband's name, were able to retire to, like, Florida or Arizona or wherever.
Was there? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because he had paid for that, you know, to be buried there. And so that's why, like, Peter Duke, like, randomly visited the farm one day and, like, met the girls when they were very young and Nell wasn't even born yet, and things like that. And, you know, he got to look at the cemetery, and then he paid for that plot to be buried on, to be buried in. And then Sebastian came to, like, say, like, hey, this was his last wishes. He bought this plot, and, you know, he's going to be buried here. And they have a lovely little funeral, intimate funeral, for him, and, you know, lay him to rest. And I think that was, I don't know, I think that was a really good ending there. Like, you know, he had somehow, like, played this, like, indirect role in their lives. And, like, you know, so I think, like, putting him to rest, like, physically was, like, also a metaphorical and to, like, his role that he played in their lives indirectly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, it was good. I will read more from Anne Patchett for sure. I'm definitely curious to read more of her work. I know that this is probably her most popular, to be completely honest. There's others out there that are also pretty popular by her. I have a couple other copies of different books. Bel Canto and Commonwealth, I think, are the ones I have. But anyway, no, it does make for some interesting conversation. Some controversial conversation. I don't know how controversial, but oh my goodness. Okay, shall we get into our film and TV movie segment before we get into End Matter? Did we dreamcast this at all? What do we think?
Oh, I dreamcasted the heck up out of this. I don't know.
Yeah, you did.
Dang, yeah, you did. I'm looking at your notes now. Okay, go ahead.
So I thought for Laura, when I thought of older, because they're not 60 yet. And I don't know, just for some reason, Jennifer Connelly came into my mind for her.
He's pretty great.
And for Joe, Ewan McGregor, I thought he would make like a really good, like, older Joe. I don't know. That just seemed like it fit so well for me. For younger Laura, I thought of Hailee Steinfeld. I thought she would be like a really good rendition for, you know, that theme of acting and everything like that. For younger Joe, Logan Lerman, he was in Jurassic World. He was the big brother in Jurassic World. Yeah. Okay. So I thought of him as, the younger Joe. For daughters, I thought of Elle Fanning, Chloe Grace, and Lily Reinhart. I thought they were some good renditions to be their daughters. And then for Duke, like, younger self, I thought of Nick Robinson. I thought he would be a good,
that one.
He was in, hold on, I had this up earlier because I, hold on.
I'm not even sure if I remember the name. The name is not speaking to me at the moment.
He was in the, I don't know if you've seen, like, Love, Simon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So those are mine.
I like it. I like it.
Very good.
Abby?
So I did the older versions. And so for Laura, I was thinking either Winona Ryder or Nicole Kidman. I can see them both in this role. Just kind of like living that simple life and, like, you know, kind of like reflecting on their life and things like that. I think they can play, either one can play Laura very well, and they each would, like, bring their own, like, flair to it for sure. I was thinking that, like, someone like Scarlett Johansson as Emily, and then Amelia Clarke as Nell, and then Anna Kendrick as Maisie. So that was, like, my kind of, like, lineup. I know it's all very, like, random, but I can see, like, for Scarlett Johansson, I think she can play that, like, older sister, still trying to figure things out very, very well. because I think that she, like, you know, if I think about just like past roles that she has, like when she talks about like her roles, like I think it's like nanny or something. I was thinking specifically of that role for her. Emilia Clarke as Nell, because I think she has like this, like Nell has this excitement about life because she's the older and she has like this sensitivity. And I think Emilia Clarke can play that very well. And then Anna Kendrick, because I think Maisie's like a little bit sarcastic, but like she like doesn't, and she also doesn't like take things. And I feel like Anna Kendrick can play that role very well.
So. You were thinking of her from Pitch Perfect.
Yes, I was thinking about that. I'm like, I can see her like being a vet and like nonchalantly talking about like, you know, all the things that she experienced.
Yeah, I love that. That's good.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Well, okay, so for mine, I mean, I feel like it's pretty obvious that I was going like total Mamma Mia when I was thinking about this. I mean, I hate saying that I feel like maybe she is a little too old for it, but also at the same time, Meryl Streep will always be timeless in my brain. To me, like, how could she not be older, Laura? Like, that's just, I don't know. That's my headcanon for that. And any of you listeners out there, I mean, she read the audiobook. She narrated the audiobook for Tom Lake. And everyone I know that has listened to this book on Audible or on audiobook with Meryl Streep narrating has literally been like, it is the best experience to listen to her reading this book. So I had her as older Laura. And then if you look at her oldest daughter, Mamie Gummer, actually, like for the young version of Laura, I don't know. They are mother daughter. They look so much alike. Like she absolutely could be the younger version. I don't know. So I really liked that. And then who did I have? I put in there Lily James then as Emily. It sounds like outside of Alicia, Abigail, you and I both struggled with casting the guys. Like, I don't know. I just wasn't like, yeah. Theo James as Duke.
I could see that.
Okay.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could just see that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I can also see maybe, like, I don't know why. I'm just going to say Chris Pine as Joe, like older Joe. I could see that as well.
Should be super sweet. I would love to see Chris Pine in that role. Mm-hmm. Oh, that would be so. See, and then I feel so wrong for like saying Meryl Streep, because like, could you really see a movie in which Meryl Streep and Chris Pine would be together? So I didn't do the age thing. I don't know. Anyway, don't mind me. What?
She's timeless, though. He would be honored to be in the same room as Meryl Streep.
Okay. Can either of you seriously argue with me and tell me, though, that, I don't care what age she is. She is someone in my book that has not done wrong. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. I think she did. Yep, yeah. You're right. She does go wrong. So, yeah, very well. So I think she would be, like, a good fit. Like, even I can see her as, like, Maisie, like, older Maisie. Like, even, like, if she were to be involved, like, you know, kind of, like, that wise woman who, like, shares this knowledge and has, like, all this warmth, too. Like, I also see her in that role.
Oh, you're talking about the aunt.
Yeah.
Joe's aunt. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, you're so right. You're so right. Oh, my goodness. So crazy. Oh, well, I guess we should get into some end matter. I can't believe we've now read Tom Lake by Ann Patchett. The show is good. If you haven't picked it up, if you haven't read, I personally think we picked a great time of year to read it, by the way. Mm-hmm. Like, spring, summer, perfect time. Mm-hmm. Listener, if you are reading along with us, our next book we're doing is The Last Love Note by Emma Gray. Super excited for this one. I have not heard a whole lot of buzz about it. I mean, it was a book of the month pick that Alicia and I picked up back. So super curious and interested to see how that one goes. So that is going to be our May book of the month pick. Yay. Keep straight what day of the week it is, what month we're in, but we're going to get there. We are like, I mean, it's just so crazy how fast I feel like time is flying. Mm-hmm. Super excited to discuss that one with you ladies. And I think it's going to be really excellent. It's going to be really great. So is there anything else we want to leave listeners with? Listeners, we do have an Instagram. We would love to hear from you. We would love to hear if you have any book suggestions out there, if you want to recommend or share something for the podcast that we can throw up here. You can find us at Tales Over Tales Podcast on Instagram. We also have a Gmail email account, which is Tales Over Tales Pod. Mm-hmm. com. So feel free to reach out to us, rate, review. We are now posting these podcast episodes to YouTube as well. You can subscribe to us there. And again, just let us know what you think. You can find me and follow me personally on Instagram. I am at Cozy Reads and Sips.
And you can follow me at Allie.reads.turner.
And you can follow me at the Charles in Charge.
Oh, goodness. Well, until next month, my beautiful, lovely friends, stay reading.
Stay classy.
And as always,
stay reading.
Bye. Bye.